Okay, so today is Parashas Halotzcha, the Shabbos Halotzcha. I want to share with you a few short, most of the things I have today are short verloch, which I've come across in preparing. Can I use my pencil? Alright, it doesn't matter. Alright, it doesn't matter, it's fine. Okay, the first idea is something that comes from the beginning of the parasha. Da'aber el Aaron, v'yamar to elav the menorah behalayischa haneiros l'mul pnei menorah yeiru shavas haneiros. The instruction, Hashem says to Moshe, instruct Aaron, he shall light the neiros, and when he lights the neiros, all of the neiros shall point towards the center l'mul pnei hamenorah yeiru shavas haneiros. Okay. A command. And we have a very unusual pasuk gimel. The Torah tells us that Aaron did what he's supposed to do. Vayas kein Aaron el mul pnei ha'nora he'ala ne'rosecha ka'asher tziva Hashem es Moshe. The famous Rashi says this is the shavach, the praise of Aaron. Rashi, lahagid shivacho shel Aaron sheloy shina. He did not change. He did not deviate. He did what he is supposed to do. What is going on? What is the chiddush? What's the big deal? Of course he didn't change. Of course he was instructed. He was the Kohen Gadol. Of course Aaron HaKohen is not going to do what he's supposed to do. What is the chiddush? What is happening over here? How do we understand the chiddush of the pasuk and the chiddush of Rashi? So the truth is, there's an infinite number of commentaries that discuss this in all different spin-offs of one Varna, another Varna, ideas of what it means, Loishim. So I wanted to tell you another idea, a short, very short idea. And to understand this idea, let us go back to the Mishkan itself. The Mishkan itself was made from crushing. We know that on Shabbos there are Lamites Melachos. One of the Lamites Melachos is the Melacha of Ksiva. You're not allowed to write on Shabbos. Chazal tell us, where do the 39 acts of labor come from? They come from the Mishkan. Anything that was needed for the construction of the Mishkan automatically is upgraded to the status of a melacha. Any constructive act of labor that was not used, done in part of the construction of the Mishkan, does not qualify as a forbidden act of labor for Shabbos. The Gemara's question was, where in the Mishkan do we find the Melacha of Ksiva? Where do they have to write? There were no architects. There were no blueprints. Where do we find it? It was all divinely inspired. Where do we find the Melacha of Ksiva? So the Gemara says something that is fascinating, that they would take apart the Mishkan periodically as they traveled through the desert. The Levim, they took apart the Mishkan, stored the Kerushim on wagons, and when they came back, when the Amud Ha'anon stopped, they would erect the Mishkan. Now, I'm sure you've all seen, when you put together your sukkah, or if you've seen other people's sukkah, there are panels, and it says 1, 2, 3, and you connect the numbers. You always want to make sure you put the panel that was over here with the panel over here, because you know it works. You know, if it worked last year, the panels fit, and the screws match up, you know your business will work this year as well. And the truth is, all the Kerushim in the Mishkan, more or less, except for the corner of Kerushim and the back side of the Mishkan, were identical. So really, there was no need to number the Kerushim to make sure they all, you'll put the same Keresh in the exact same location, because they were all identical. Yet, they would write letters. Fascinating. They would write on the Kerushim, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Heivav, in order that when they would put the Mishkan, they would reconstruct the Mishkan, they would reassemble the Mishkan, the Keresh that was located on the left middle would once again be on the left middle. The one that was in the right corner would once again be the right corner. Keresh, Shezoch, Aliyos, B'Mizruch, T'yem B'Mizruch. The Keresh that would merit it to be in the east, I guess there was a merit that you're closer towards the Aron. The closer you are to the vicinity of the Aron HaKodesh, there was a higher degree of Kedusha. And that's where they would write letters to make sure all of the Kerushim were located in the same exact location. And from this, Chazal tell us, you see how important it is not to be mivaz another human being, to give kavod, to give honor. Madach krashim, which is nothing more than wood. It's not a living organism. It's just a piece of wood. Yet the Torah is makbid. It's one of the lamed tes milachos on Shabbos. It's a chi of skila because the Torah is makbid that you should not humiliate a keresh. Don't take away what it was entitled to. If it had the merit, the schus, to be close to the Arun HaKodesh, you're now going to disgrace this keresh and bring it to the front. Distance it from the Arun HaKodesh. Al achas kamo v'kamo, when you're dealing with human beings, a human being has sensitive, has needs, needs to be recognized, needs to be honored here and there. Certainly how careful one must be not to be mevaz another human being. Derech agav, okay, this is totally off the record. And once, today we live in a world of bloggers. There's a lot going on. In fact, there's a very interesting article in Am magazine about the media, how the Orthodox community is perceived by the media, the secular media, the Jewish media, the left-wing media. And it's never been like this, where there's so much criticism, there's so much negativity. Anything you can possibly, chesaron you can find, it's brought out, it's magnified, it's super magnified, it's out of hand. This goes against the very nature of the tafkid of ksiva. Ksiva in the Mishkan is not just ksiva in the Mishkan. All of the lamed tes forms of malacha in the Mishkan are the building blocks of creation. There's a parallel. There's the malachas of the Mishkan, and the Mishkan itself represents the creation of the world. Where do we find ksiva? The whole purpose of ksiva was given to this world. The gift of writing was given to this world to give honor, to give kavod, to make sure that the keresh that received the honor of being in the front should remain in the front, should not be humiliated. This is where ksiva, the gift of ksiva, was given to the world for the Mishkan, and it was given for the Mishkan. This means that it's part of the blueprint of creation. To take the koich of writing and to use it to humiliate, to super magnify minor, teeny imperfections, when you totally go overboard, of course, there's constructive criticism. No one is coming to say that the person should not be critical. There's nothing that that's a given. That's the whole world is. If you're not going to criticize, you're not going to have anything in this world. But to go overboard to such a degree, to take minor imperfections and to totally overblow things with the koyach ksiva of bizyonos, it goes against the very grain of what ksiva was given for in this world. Ksiva was given for honor, was not given for disgrace. So that's a side point. Now let's come, that's what we learned. That's what we learned about the crush. Now, what do I want with that? Let's go to the menorah. There's a discussion. There's a very great disagreement among the Rishonim about the neros of the menorah. We know the menorah was made from one piece of metal. Miksha tasamnar. The menorah was made from one mass of metal. Moshe took a block of gold, they threw it to the fire, came out the menorah, they crafted it. It has to be one. What about the very, very top of the menorah where you pour the oil? The part of the menorah where you pour the oil is called a ner. A ner, we translate ner as the fire, a candle. It's not correct. A ner is the receptacle. Literally, in the Torah and in Chazal, wherever the word ner is used, it means a receptacle. It means cheres, metal, a lamp. In the lamp, you pour oil and you insert a wick. And you have fire. This is what a ner is, the receptacle in which you apply the oil and the wick. Were the neros of the menorah miksha achas? Were they one piece of metal together with the rest of the menorah? There are different opinions. According to some opinions, some rishonim, yes. When the Torah says the menorah was made from one piece of metal, it includes the neros. The neros were one with the menorah. And when Aaron would clean the neros, being that it's gold, gold is bendable, it's very soft, he would actually bend. He was able to bend the neros to pour out the residual oil and wicks from the menorah. But it was still one piece with the menorah. Many other Yishonim disagree. They bring many rayos from different psukim in Tanakh, that the neros are not part of the menorah. The menorah is the candelabra, it's the base. the konim, and on top of the konim he would put lamps. And every day Aaron would come, he would take the lamp out, completely remove the lamp, spill out the extra oil, clean it out, the wicks, and then put the lamp back on, insert, put new oil, new wicks, and light. The lamps were not part of the menorah itself. They could, and they were, removed from the candelabra itself. This is the opinion of many Rishonim, and there are many psukim which seem to indicate that this is correct, this is true. Therefore, now it's not my voice, I saw this idea, I don't remember where I saw this, is that that's what Rashi here means, Shloishina. We're following the opinion that says that the Neros were removable. And every single day, Aaron would come in and would cut Tavas and he would remove the lamps. And when he removed the lamps, he would take the lamps off the menorah, all seven of them. And he had some type of basin, whatever, and he would clean out the leftover oil on the wicks. And then he would put the Neros back on the candelabra. And being that all the Neros are identical, just like we discussed with regard to the Krushim, if Aaron wanted, if he wished, he could have interchanged, not be makbid, I'll put the Ner that was yesterday on the left, I'll put it on the right, I'll put it was number two, number four. I can switch, I can move them all around. What's the big deal? What's the difference? Who cares? Just like in your own private Hanukkah menorah, if you have some type of, if you reuse the lamps, the glass, the cups on top, if you're going to reuse them, so what's the big deal? You take them, you clean them, what you use less, you have to put them in the same exact place, they're identical. Who knows the difference? Vayas Kain Aaron, just like by the Kerushim, they wrote numbers, they wrote letters on each individual Kerush to make sure that the Kerush that was located in this location last time shall remain in this location this time. That's exactly what Aaron did. Vayas Kain Aaron Milamed Shaloi Shina. Now what's the significance of this? This is something which is very practical for our times. It's one thing when it comes to the Kerushim. The Kerushim is just, they put the Mishkan, they put up the structure of the Mishkan, the pieces of wood. But lighting the menorah represents Limud HaTorah. Lighting the menorah is the Or HaTorah. That's Pashat. The menorah, there's the Torah. When Aaron is lighting the menorah, what he's doing is he's training himself to be the Rosh Hashiva, a Melamed, to teach Torah to Klal Yisrael. Unfortunately, the greater Talmud Chacham you are, the greater nisayon you have to put down someone else. I don't know if you're familiar with this concept. it's a very great nisayon. One thing, a person is not a Talmud Chacham, you go to the rabbi. You know, there's certain, people who are not Talmud Chacham, whatever the rabbi says, because they don't know better. What do they know? I mean, not always true, sometimes it's the other way around. But generally speaking, if you don't know, you have faith, you know, go to a doctor. I don't know anything about the disease, the illness, whatever we're going to the doctor for. I have full faith in him. He has a degree, he studied for many years. He's been training, he has a lot of experience. Whatever he says, I have full faith in the doctor. Same thing when it comes to Torah, if you don't know anything, so whatever the rabbi says is good. But the greater Talmud Chacham you are, you feel a certain gaiva of accomplishment, of Torah, and this one is wrong, and that one is wrong. The Yetzer Hara to put down someone else who's not exactly, has not been molded in your image, is extremely great when it comes to Talmidei Chachamim. Aaron trained himself that when he lit the menorah, when he was involved in Limud HaTorah, Melamed Shloishina, the ner that was on the left will always be on the left. The ner that's on the right will always be on the right. Just like the Krushim, the Keresh that was in the Mizrach will always be in the Mizrach. He was very careful that his learning should not lead to any shemetz of gaiva that would result in demeaning or disgracing being mevaza another person. His learning was only Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Olam. It's a very great, very great nisayon. And that's perhaps a little bit of a drush of what it means to Vayash Shaloishina. The Nair on the left is on the left. What does that mean? What does it mean? It means I'm chamed you. I'm makbid that you should receive the honor that you deserve. If you are closer towards the Shechina, you're closer towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you should get what you deserve. I'm not going to take you, the Ner that yesterday was close to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and push you all the way to the back, and push you towards the entrance to be far away from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's a bezoyon. Just like we learned this Yisog by the Krushim. Shalei Shina, a Talmidei Chacham have to be extremely careful to be mechabed, to give kavod to those that are deserving, and not in any way to look down and be mevaza someone that doesn't meet up to their standards. But that's one short drush. Let's go to another drush.
So you have to say they weren't numbered.
Yeah, and we don't find anywhere in Chazal that says the Neris were numbered. That was part of his guidance. It was a sensitivity. It could be there wasn't a requirement. When it comes to the Mishkan, obviously it's one of the Lama Test Halachas. Somehow it's not in the Torah anywhere. It's whatever it is. Halacha L'Moshe Sinai. It's not. Chazal tell us this, and we know Ad Kedei. It's Gemara. Malach of Ksiva. Malach of Deraisa. But we don't find this. What?
There are a lot more boards than there are Neros.
Okay, but it's a very unique idea. It's a unique idea that they were Neros. Yeah. First of all, are detachable. They are, which is accepted. That's pasha. That's not a kasha. Even though when you look at the menorah today, you go look at all these books in the menorah, it appears to be one piece of metal. That's not so simple. In the newer books, the more updated books, they discuss that point, because it appears that many rishonim hold they were not one piece with the menorah. They were separated, and then it's a whole new chiddush, the sensitivity of doing something which perhaps is not required. It's a godless, shaloshina, sensitivity. And being that he's also the koi Aaron, kimi koyin yish, sifse chacha, then they teach Torah, it's a sensitivity. If you're a Talmud Chacham, how much more careful you have to be with regard to someone else's honor and dignity, and not chas to shol di mevaz of someone. Okay, let's go to another example, another idea. Running out of time. Another idea. I didn't mean that it takes a long time, that idea. Now let's discuss fish, doggin. In this week's parashah, we learned about the Misayim. They were a group of people that were complainers. The complainers are always people that have what to complain about. And they said, Zocharnu es hadoga. Remember the good old days. I must find the pasuk. Please give me one moment to find the pasuk. Asilch shechatzoytzois. Vayiyam ki misoyninim. There were people that complained. Ra. Evil complained the Ozne Hashem, Ayishma Hashem, Ayichar Apo. Okay, what did they complain about? The Hosasuv Hashem, Bikivo, His Avu Tava. They had a desire to have a desire. Vayashuv, Ayifkul, Dominate, Shova, Yamu, Yachilenu, Bosso, we want meat. We want meat. And then they say something that is very strange. Zocharnu es Hadoga, remember the fish. Ah, the salmon. I don't even know the name of all these exotic fish they have today. Asher noichal v'mitzrayim chinam. We ate in Egypt for free. Could you imagine going to the restaurant if you order fish? It's free. I once went to a restaurant. There's a guy there that says to me, oh, why do you come to this restaurant? The only reason why I was there was because whatever. And he says to me, I know why. Because he says to me, he's an Israeli. He's talking in rapid fire Hebrew and a little Yiddish. This restaurant, the fish is like meat. And who's eating? However, but Zocharnu es Hadoga Shanochal b'Mitzrayim Chinam, for free. Let me read you the Rashi. Rashi says, free? No one gives you anything for free. Hey, Ash im Toimar, She Mitzrayim Noisnim Lohem Dogim Chinam? Can it be that the Egyptians gave the Jews fish for free? It says in the pasuk, "V'teven lo yinosein lochem." They didn't even give them straw for free. They had to go like slaves out into the fields to collect the straw. Im teven lo hayinosein lochem chinam. Dogim hayinosein lochem chinam. Hayitachin, the Egyptians gave the Jewish people salmon for free. Impossible. Umaro emer chinam. So what then does it mean chinam? So Rashi, the pshuta shal mikra. Chinam min hamitzvos, free from mitzvos. Now, what does that mean? So the Sifse Chacham says, he says one pshat uperish shelohayu mizonoseinu tuluyim behamitzvos kaasher ata. That our mizonos now we receive the mon. If we only receive the mon if we are deserving. Every morning we wake up and sometimes there is no mon at the front door. And if there's no man at the front door waiting for us, we have to go travel out into the desert to find man. And that is a sign that we have sinned and Hashem does not have, Hashem is not happy with us, and that's why we have to go and work to receive our mana, and that's a musr shmuz for us, that tomorrow we better do tshuva so that tomorrow we should merit to have man come to our front door. We have to work to earn our keep. In Egypt, we had no mitzvahs at that point in time. That was before Matan Torah. It was an easy life. We were slaves. We got food, but our food was not dependent on our observance of the Torah mitzvahs. Okay, that's how the Sif Secham explains Rashi. But there's still something missing from the interpretation. There's something missing a little bit in that interpretation. It has to be elaborated upon. So to supplement the Sifsei Chachamim, I've seen this since, I don't remember where I saw this, but unfortunately they say the following idea. Fish has no mitzvahs, or very few mitzvahs. Meat, there's chalef, there's dam, there's a requirement to shechita. There are 70 trefos, 70 different things that can go wrong that would cause the meat to become a trefa. There are a lot of halachas. Chaylev, dam, shchita, hilchos trefos, gid hanoshe, 5 things. A lot of mitzvahs, a lot of complications when it comes to eating meat, a lot of mitzvahs. Fish? There's no chaylev, there's no dam. You don't have to worry about a gid hanoshe. You don't have to inspect its lungs. You don't have to. There's no. That's a simen. Once it's a kosher, it's a kosher fish. Well, yeah, that's not a requirement. If it's a kosher fish, finish. It's deathly ill, it doesn't make a difference. There's no shchita. Once you're dealing with a kosher fish, there are no mitzvos. So what they were complaining is now we're living in after Matan Torah, post Matan Torah, everything that we do in this world, you gotta do this, you gotta do this. There's so many requirements. It's just too difficult for us to keep all the mitzvos. Well, remember our lifestyle in Egypt, it was like fish. Zocharnu es hadogim asher nechal b'mitzrayim chinam. There were no mitzvos. Easy life. You wake up in the morning, you go to work. You don't have to daven. You don't have to wash negavasa. You don't have to worry about this and worry about this. Simple life. Chinam. No chelev, no dam, no giranosh, no shchita, no trefus. That's the meaning of fish. Okay. That's how we learn pshat. That's a really posh pshat in the pasuk in Chumash Tir Rashi, supplemented by this idea. Now, let's discuss Shabbos. On Shabbos, there is a minhag to eat fish. We all know that we have this custom. We once discussed this. Why do we eat fish on Shabbos? I'll tell you this. Before we say anything exotic, let's learn the simple reason why it is a very big inyan, a very significant inyan to eat fish on Shabbos. Chazal tell us, with regard to fish, Leiposka zu hamosan. Their stench, whatever that means, never went well, the zoo, whatever that, there's something about fish that never went away. Whatever that means, I don't know. Whatever, but never. What does that mean? We live today in this world. Every person, you look at a person in the street, who is he? He's a son of so-and-so. And he's a grandson, and a great-grandson of son. He's an anacle of someone that goes back to the beginning of this world. How far back can you go in this world? The answer is to the Dor HaMabul. The Mabul is the earliest you can go back to b'miyaches yourself, to Shem, Cham, and Yofes. That's as far as you can go. You can't go back. You can't go back further than the whole world came from Noach and his 3 sons, Shem, Cham, and Yofes. Why? Why don't we go back to Adam HaRishon? Why don't we go back to before the Mabul? The answer is, the Mabul was the end of the world. The world was destroyed. This world is a new world. This is very clear in Chazal. Everything changed. The Teva changed. Things happen that the way we live today, nature is different today than it was before the time of the Mabul. Hashem destroyed the world. He took Adam, his three sons, and all of the animals, he put them in the Teva, and basically the Teva was like he took them to Mars. He took them out of this world, destroyed the world, started fresh, and then brought Noach, his sons, the animals, here's a new world, version 2. Upgrades. It's really a downgrade. Start all over again on this world. So to a certain degree, we cannot relate to the world that was before the Mabul. Okay, physically, we are Yuchasim, we can trace ourselves back to Adam. That's true, but there was a very great break when the Mabul occurred and we were taken away and then we were put back in this world. There's one exception. The only exception is fish. Because fish, they were in this world, they were not affected by the mammal. The world was destroyed with water, hot water, and they were able to swim and survive. So when you eat a fish, you're eating a miyuchas. This fish can take you all the way back to Maisa Bereishis. Why would you want to go back to Maisa Bereishis? Because Maisa Bereishis is Shabbos. What is Shabbos? For Shabbos Vayinof, Hashem created the world in 6 days, and Hashem rested. If you want to go back to Shabbos Bereishis, creation, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's rest, you got to eat fish. Because it's the only thing in this world that can take you back to the very beginning, who was there at the time of Shabbos Bereishis. This is the simple reason why we eat fish. Okay, by Ashkenazim, I don't know, I'm not a big fish eater, I don't think most people I know they're not. By Hasidim, it's a big thing, fish. But it's really true, everyone eats fish on Shabbos. People don't eat fish all week, they eat gefilte fish, they eat this fish. This is tradition, and this is the simple reason why we eat fish. Okay, finished. Now, let's drush. Okay, new idea. I once saw this in a sefer, and I was intrigued. And it got me thinking to say what I'm about to say now. There was a person, must have been a chassid, I assume he was a chassidish fellow. And by chassidim, fish is a very, very important thing, like we just said. They take this part that I told you very, very seriously. The Rebbe distributes shirayim of fish. Serious, serious business. So he felt, you know, if you wash and eat fish, it's such a dover choshev to eat fish on Shabbos. How could it be you don't have an opportunity to make a bracha on the fish? This person, he took life very seriously. When he made a bracha, it meant a lot to him to make a bracha, an opportunity to make a bracha, even though it's shahakol, shahakol niyeh bidvaro. You don't make a bracha. You wash, you make kiddush, and you wash, and that's it. Hamayitzi lechem in aretz, you finished. That's it. You eat all the parts of the meal. You don't make a... I don't have an opportunity to make a bracha. So his custom was, he made kiddush, and he ate mezonos, you know, kiddush b'makom suda, he had mezonos, and he ate fish. And he made a bracha, baruch atah Hashem, elokeinu melech olam, shehakol nieh bidvaro. And he ate, because he wanted to have the opportunity to make the bracha on fish. And then he had a hefsek, and then later he washed. He was very makbid every Shabbos that he should have kiddush, of course, with mezonos, to be mekayim kiddush mokom suda, and make the bracha on fish. And this created a very big discussion among a certain group of people. Is he right? Is he wrong? Is there such a thing? What he's doing is such an Indian? Okay, and then some said, no, it's not exactly the right thing to do. There's other reasons. That's not our topic of discussion. But very interesting idea that it's so chashuv, why don't we put ourselves in a situation where we make a special bracha? I think most of us, it's not our custom. Okay, if you go to you're invited to a kiddush, the simcha, there's an offer. Okay, so you go to the kiddush. You hear a kiddush, you take a piece of cake, some challah. Oh, maybe a fish, or maybe yeah, maybe not. You do have, you don't have. Depends if the fish looks good. There is fish, no fish. You don't think about it very much. It's not a hakpada, but it's an interesting idea. Most of us don't think about this. We don't just go. You have a meal. If you have fish, you eat the fish, and you don't make a special bracha. Okay, so now I want to say a little Jewish. Shabbos, we eat fish. Why taka do we eat fish? This is Jewish. Hey, we've gone through the pshat. Now let's. Shabbos is me'ain. There are three Shabbosos. The Shabbos Bereishis. That's the pashut. The Shabbos Matan Torah, which we're not going to discuss. The Shabbos Matan. And then the Shabbos me'ain Olam Haba. There's going to be the Shabbos Yemos HaMashiach. There are 6,000 years in the history of the world. And we're corresponding to the sit to sit by Hashem, it's 7 days. Each day by HaKadosh Baruch Hu is 1,000 years. And then the seventh millennium, 7,000, that year from 6,000, that millennium corresponds to Yom Shekul Shabbos, Yom Menucha L'Chayei Ha'olam Haba. In that tkufa, we don't know, we have no idea what this means. And the Rambam says, don't even begin to try to think what this means. But one thing that we do know is that it's not a time of opportunity. It's not going to be a time where we can have the ability to do mitzvos and earn reward. Bizman has said, there is Hester Panim. We don't see openly the hand of Hashem. So every time that we do a mitzvah, we're struggling against the Yetzer Hara. It's a Messiah. And because we overcome the Yetzer Hara and we have emuna in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we will be rewarded beyond our wildest imagination. But when it's going to be obvious, when the Shechina is in front of our face and we're going to do a mitzvah, we're not going to have those opportunities. So there's not going to be reward. Chazal tell us this. Once it comes Shabbos, it's too late to prepare. Once it comes Shabbos, you can't prepare. When it comes Olam Haba, the seventh millennium, it's too late to prepare. You can't do a mitzvah and expect to receive reward because there is no test. There's no degree of faith in doing the mitzvah. It's clearly obvious to all. When you eat fish on Shabbos, every single Shabbos is a reminder of Ma'aseh Bereishis. It's a reminder of Matan Torah. But it's also a reminder of La'asa Lava. It's Menucha. Yoy Menucha Me'ein Olam Haba. Olam Haba is a bitter, sweet experience. It's sweet because Shechina, because it's a time of reward. But it's also bitter because you don't have opportunity to express your emuna in Hashem. It's too late. Chazal say this. Days are coming which I will say, I don't want. I have no pleasure in these days. Because in these days, I don't have the opportunity to express my emuna. So Olam Haba obviously is Olam Haba. I mean, what more do you need to say? But in another sense, it's the end. The opportunity to come close to Hashem in the way we do today is lost. It's not a happy time in that respect. When you eat fish, it's like you're learning a Musa Sefer on Shabbos. You begin your Shabbos meal. You make Kiddush. You wash. Me'ein Olam Haba. And you're going to say Divrei Torah, and you're going to... It's a time of a closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's a wake-up call. It's like now when you bring you the fish, it's like they're saying, time out, we're going to learn Musar. We're going to learn Mesilas Yesharim, Chavis HaLevavos, Derech Hashem, Shari Tshuva. We're going to learn Musar. What's the Musar? Here's the fish. The fish I'm giving you at your meal is Chinam. There's nothing in this fish. You don't make a bracha, and there's no bracha, and there's no chalev, and there's no dam, and there's no gid hanoshe, and there's no hilchos treifas, and there's no shchita. The fish that you eat Shabbos at your meal is chinam, garnished. There's no opportunity to sanctify HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name in this fish. And this fish is a reminder of Me'ein Olam Haba. That's what's going to be in Olam Haba. It's going to be a time of chinam. You're not going to have those opportunities. And therefore, it's a wake-up call. We're not yet there yet. We're not holding there. And therefore, Adarabba, take advantage. Savor every moment. Every moment of Shabbos, the world is going on. If a person go to the guy next door, he's on the internet. The world is going. There are things happening. The world is, people are busy. Everyone's on their iPhone and their iPad and their iPod and so on and so forth. The world, no. Emun in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's Shabbos. I don't do these things on Shabbos. Shabbos is a day for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a wake-up call to take advantage of what opportunity we have now to prepare for the future. So, mikotze el hakotze. Mitzad echad, eat fish on Shabbos, going back to Ma'aseh Bereishis. You're taking you back to the ultimate Shabbos, the first Shabbos. But it's also, the fish you're eating now is taking you forward to Olam Haba, where there it's going to be just like what they said here in this pasuk, Zocharnu es hadoga, asher noichal b'mitzrayim chinam, chinam b'mitzvos. No opportunity whatsoever in eating the fish. Not even a bracha. Yeah. Not even a bracha. You already made the bracha. I'm on the bread, the pot of the fish. Chelev, dam, granoshe, treifes, shchita. This is an idea I want to bring out. Okay, let's go to another idea. This is a very, very short idea. Just something I found to be very cute. We learn in this week's parasha, Vayhi bin Soh Aaron, Vayom Moshe, these two psukim. I'm going to discuss that in one moment. That's going to be the next thing I want to say. I want to just tell you a very cute little vart of... we have here the backwards nun, it's a separate sefer. Uvenucho yomar, Shuva Hashem, restore the Rivavos Alfei Yisrael. From here, Chazal, I think Rashi brings down, Rivavos is, Rivava is 10,000. Rivavos is plural of 10,000. Plural of Rivava. So what is plural? What is the minimum of 10,000 multiplied by 2? 20,000. Alfei, Elef is 1,000. Alfei is the plural of 1,000. What is the minimum plural of 1,000? 2,000. So we have Rivava and Elef, and both of them are written in the plural form. The plural form is at least double. So it's 22,000. 20, and 20,000, 2,000, 22,000. Chazal said, and here we learn that the Shechina does not rest on Klal Yisrael unless there are 22,000 Jews assembled in one location. Rashi brings down this Chazal, if I'm not mistaken, Lamed Vav. Pasuk Lamed Vav, Rivos Alfei Yisrael, so Rashi in Chumash, Magid, She'ein HaShechina Shora B'Yisrael, Pechusim Mishnei Alofim Ushtei Rivavos. If there are 22,000 people present, you went to the Asifa, they were there, how many thousand? How many? 60,000? 60,000?
45.
40 in one location by the Sea of Hashas. Last time they didn't make 20,000, if I'm not mistaken. The last time. This is unique. I think in Madison Square Garden and in the other venue, they did not have what? In one location?
Madison Square Garden was 20,000.
Oh, 20,000. But it did not hold 22. But it did not hold in one location. This event in City Field was unique. It was the first time. And American Eretz Yisrael, they have gatherings that have 20, they have even 100,000 sometimes, but in America to have 22,000, this was a very unique event in the history of the United States. America to have so many Jews in one location at the same time, and here the Shechina rests when you have 22,000 people make a bracha. Chacham Arozin, fine, but I don't know if they made it. They don't make the bracha. That was a whole shaila. Should have made the bracha. Whatever it is, but 22,000. What is the significance of 22,000? Let me say very short. I won't tell you another word. What is the significance of 22,000? So I saw a very nice idea. Where I saw this, I don't remember. That's a chaval. I have to do tshuva and always get the name straight because. But this is not my idea. Shlomo HaMelech said, "Adam echad me'elef matzasi." Don't tell this to anyone else. Don't tell what it says in the next part of the pasuk. Don't go home and tell that to anyone. Even though it says that in the book. But Adam Echad Me'elef Matzasi, I found one in 1,000. Shlomo HaMelech makes a statement that when you deal with 1,000 people, you will always find it's a given. There is one person among 1,000 that's a shalim, a complete person. Sholem in Torah Mitzvos is doing what he's supposed to do. One in a thousand. When you have 22,000 people in one location, that means you have 22 Jews there that are Shleim. Guaranteed. 22 Jews that are Shleim. What is a Shal? And what is it? The number 22, the significance of number 22 is the letters of the Aleph Beis. There are 22 letters in the Aleph Beis. The number 22 represents Shlemus. And when you're dealing with the Adam HaSholem, and to have, because since the building blocks of creation are 22. A human being is the tafkid of creation, that he's the purpose. And when the purpose does what he's supposed to be doing, and when you have 22 of them together, this is magic. This is something that is very special, to have 22 Jews. It's not so much the fact that you have 22,000. It's that in the 22,000, Adam Echad Me'elef Matzos, you have 22 Jews there. And what's the riot to this? Sanhedrin Kitana. What is the size of a small Sanhedrin in Gemara to kill a human being? Cattle punish? 23. But why is it 23? Look at the Gemara. Because you need one in Bezer Shakal. The Gemara makes a drasha in the Sechta Sanhedrin. I don't remember the details of the drasha, but the Gemara makes a drasha that in order to make a Sanhedrin, you need 22 people. 22. It's just that. Since 22 is an even number, and you cannot have an even number because Bezin has to be able to decide Achad Adam Hados, it's a technicality. We add one more person. But the prime, the core of a Bezin is 22. What type of people do you take for the Bezin? Just stop. Your average person in the street? No, you have to take a sholem. When you have 22,000 people, what you really have, you have in front of you a Bezdin that's Roy, a real Bezdin, a real authority in Klal Yisrael. It's an unbelievable idea. Stop. I always want to go 20,000. Last Sima Shah, 7 years. Oh, we're going to have together, maybe we'll have in one stadium 22,000. What's the Gedula? The Gedula is 22,000 people. You have a Sanhedrin Kitana, the real Koyach of a Sanhedrin. And a Sanhedrin is the authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is represented here in this world. It's an incredible idea. Incredible concept. And that's what comes out over here. It's not my idea. This is what I saw. I saw this. I don't know where I saw this. I can't remember. But this is a very powerful idea. Okay, now I want to go to one more vart. We're almost out of time. I have to tell you this one. This is not my vart. This comes from the Chidah. This is where it comes from. I can show you very quick. This comes from the Chidah. This is an amazing idea. I saw this yesterday, and it's all explained in great detail by Rav Pinchas Friedman in one of my favorite Svarim, Shevilei Pinchas. And he says something which is amazing. We know that there are five Svarim, Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Chamisha, right, there are five Svarim. But Yed Chazal, in many places, there are really seven Sefarim. How do you have seven Sfarim? Because the parasha of Ayhi bin Sohar and Rav Moshe is really a Sefer Torah in and of itself. That's why there are backward nuns. So what are the seven Sfarim? There's Bereishis, Shemos, Vayikra. There is the first part of Bamidbar until parasha Svaloyskha of Ayhi bin Sohar. Then there are the two Psukim by Ayhi bin Sohar, which is the fifth Sefer. And then there is the remainder of Bamidbar, which is number six. And then there is Devarim. And there's a pasuk, Tilm Chotzva Amudeh HaShiva, Hashem quarried seven pillars for this world corresponding to the seven Sefarim. The seven Sefarim include Vayihi bin Soa, which is a Sefer, and breaks up the remainder of Amidbar into two more Sefarim for a grand total of seven Sefarim. And these seven Sefarim correspond to the seven Neros of the Menorah, and the Torah goes on and on, an infinite. This is classic. I'm not telling you esoteric midrashim. This is very well established Torah that there are in Chazal everywhere. There are seven Sefarim in the Torah. Not like we are brainwashed because we say Chumash. Chumash means the fifth. There are really seven Sefarim. Okay, fine. Now, what is the nafkin lahalacha? There are two different sugyas. One of Masechet Yadayim. If you have this halacha, if you touch your hands, if you touch a Sefer Torah, you become Tamei. Okay, why? That's a whole different story. If you're not allowed to touch a Sefer Torah, Orum. You're not allowed to touch a Sefer Torah. If you touch it, you become Tamei. Let's say you have a Sefer Torah that most of the Sefer Torah, the letters are worn out. Nivla. All the letters have been worn out. Are you allowed to touch a Sefer Torah? Depends. If there are 85 letters left, a Sefer Torah has 304,805 letters. If they're all worn out, the whole Sefer Torah disappeared. They peeled off. But there are 85 letters remaining all over the place. Then you're not allowed to touch it because it's still called the Sefer Torah. Why? Because in this little teeny Sefer Torah, Sefer called Vayihi bin Soa, there are 85 letters. Another example. If there's a Chas V'Shalom, a Sreifa on Shabbos, you're allowed to do certain things to save Sefer Torah. There's certain leniencies. Are you allowed to save a Sefer Torah from a fire through these various leniencies? It depends. If the Sefer Torah, let's say it's an old, worn-out Sefer Torah Shabbalah, if there are 85 letters remaining intact, you're allowed to make use of the leniencies to save the Sefer Torah. A Sefer Torah is defined by the number 85 letters because in these pasuk, like even Sarah, there are 85 letters. Now, by the way, the first pasuk has 13 words corresponding, like he is corresponding to the last pasuk in the Torah, Ulchol Hayod HaChazaka, which has exactly 13 words. The second pasuk of Nuchimar has 7 words, corresponding to the first pasuk of the Torah, which has exactly 7 words. It's a miniature Sefer Torah. So, like the end, the beginning, how the two psukim, like looks like the first, the end, it's a miniature Sefer Torah. What's the obvious kasha? What's going on here? A little teeny Sefer Torah, 85 words, two nuns. What's going on here? What is this all about? Something doesn't make any sense here. A Sefer Torah, another kasha. A Sefer Torah, and this is what I'm telling you now, is very raw. Okay, this is not like things we said. These are very raw, esoteric things, something to think about. You're not going to walk away with a knockout. Just an idea, very interesting idea, very short, quick idea. Also, we have a tradition. There are 600,000 letters in the Sefer Torah. Last we've counted, there are 304,805. So what happened to all the missing, the 295,195 letters? Where did they all go? So there are books. There are 100 answers to answer this question. How do you explain the missing letters? None of them are satisfying. What happened to all the missing letters? Also, next question. What's with these nuns? You have upside down nuns before Vayihin Sar, after Vayihin Sar. What is going on? So the Chidah says something amazing. Why do we have this is just amazing what he says. Why do we have here the nuns, this parasha, middle of nowhere? Mitinu dininin. What's it doing here, middle of nowhere? Vayihin Sar. Rashi says, let me read you the Rashi, very short Rashi. Pasik lamid hey, vayhi bin soharon, also a synonym of fun of mea umila acharav. There are nuns upside down before and after. You know why? She'en zemu koimoi. These psukim don't belong here. No, why are they here? V'lomo nichtav kan, k'dei lahav sig bein puranus l'puranus. We don't want to have two sins next to each other. Right after this, we have about the misoinim, the complainers. And right before this, there's a sin. What's the sin? Rashi doesn't even tell us what the sin is. If you go look in the Siv Sechacham, and he tells us the sin is the last, the pasuk right before Vayibin says, Vayisu Mehar Hashem. Jewish people, after Matan Torah, they ran away. Vayisu. And Chazal say, they ran like a children. Kitinu Chabareach Mibes HaSefer. It's like the bell rang, they're out. They ran. They had enough learning Torah. The Chidah says, when a child leaves from the base, he runs away from the base of Sefer. You know, there's a lesson to be taught. There's a Rebbe. He's teaching, he has a lesson prepared. And then the child takes advantage and he runs away. The Rebbe never got a chance to finish the lesson. It's not just stomp shot, the bell rang and the lesson was complete and they ran away. They ran away without hearing the end of the lesson. That was the sin. In other words, now why? Why did that happen? So the reason that this is Kabbalah, we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was given this Kabbalah, so don't have hold me to anything else, is that there are 50 levels of Chochmah, and Moshe Rabbeinu, Ma'at Me'elukim, he only was able to merit the 49th level. He was not able to merit the 50th. That's what the menorah, they're all different parts of life around. It's not for now. Just Moshe Rabbeinu was a little bit short. I'm almost finished. Was a little bit short, was the 50th level. The part of the Torah, if not for the Chidah, you can never say this. This is Apikorsis to say this. But Chidah says this. The Torah is incomplete. There's a seventh Sefer. The seventh Sefer begins with Vayihi ben Tsoa, ends with Venucho Yomar, and in between there are 295,195 letters. All of the missing letters of the Shishim, Ribu, Osios, and the Torah are really included in the seventh Sefer, which is bigger than all of them put together. There are seven Svarim. We have Bereishis, Shemos, Vayikra, beginning of Bamidbar, end of Bamidbar, Devarim. And there's number seven. Number seven is so big and so massive, it's full of such Chochmah, it corresponds to the 50th level of Chochmah that Moshe Rabbeinu did not merit to understand and to teach Klal Yisrael. And the reason why he did not merit to receive and understand this part of the Torah was because the people weren't interested. They ran away from the Rebbe. They ran away from Har Sinai. They fled. Enough. If the Talmidim don't want, the Rebbe was not Zocha to receive the lesson to teach Klal Yisrael. Had Moshe Rabbeinu merited, had the people wanted, Hashem would have given Moshe Rabbeinu more Kedusha. He would have brought down this Chelik of the Torah, and we would have had the seven Sefer, all of the missing letters, all of the Chochmah, incredible Chochmah, that was meant to be, that does exist in this. It's still in Shomayim, has not yet come down into this world. And it's almost a fair shemesh vayikra rabba. It says there in vayikra rabba that la'asalava, there's going to be a Torah chadasha, a new Torah. The Chassam Sofer says apikursus. The Medrash is apikursus. It's a part of the animamins. One of the animamins, mamish apikursus. So that Chassam Sofer doesn't mean a new Torah. It means an expansion of what was already given. But it fits very well with what the Chidah is saying, is that there was a Torah that was given, and this little section, that's what this Vayihi saw. It alludes to the missing upside down nuns, the 50th level of Chokhmah, which we lost because we're like children. Habareach mibeis ha-sefer. Now, what's so amazing? This is so beautiful. Now, those two halachas I told you fit perfectly. What's halacha? A sefer tar shabala that was worn out. Are you allowed to save from a sefer? If you touch it, you become tamei. If it has 85 letters, what does that mean? There are 85 letters left from a much larger sefer. If you just have a little parasha that's 85 letters and you begin a sefer and begins to write something, right? He writes a little parasha and he puts it aside. And then it's a sefer. You're like, no, it's not a sefer. You have to start off with a sefer and then all the letters disappear and you're left with 85 letters. What's the raya? The raya is from Vayehi ben Soa. Because Vayehi ben Soa is just the leftovers of the massive Sefer Torah, Sefer, that has 295,195. Fits perfectly with that halacha. It's the leftovers. When do we say this pasuk? We say three psukim when we take out a Sefer from the Aron Kodesh. Vayehi, they open up the Aron Kodesh, you say this pasuk. Vayihi bin Soa Haron. When you open up the Sefer, you see the Sefer Torah in front of you. What do you have to say anything? What do you have to... Here it is. Take the Sefer. What are you saying? You're being mispala, you're being mefayis the Sefer Torah. When you open up the Aron Kodesh, Sefer Torah, you could have been much bigger. You could have been... You're missing 295,195 words. Whose fault is it? It's my fault. Because I was foolish. I was a tinuk habareach beis ha-sefer. Yimefayis. You say, you start to say, Vayihi bin Sohar, and you start with that pasuk. And then you say, Ki mitzion teitzei soira udvar Hashem misham. That pasuk is referring to la'asid lovo, when Mashiach comes, when it will be restored. And then you conclude, Baruch shenosan Torah li'amo Yisrael b'kedusha so, that we acknowledge that it was given. It's all part of the same thing. You're trying to be with these three psukim, you're being mefayis the Sefer Torah, and you're being mevachish, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should restore the missing section, and you acknowledge that there was also given at Matan Torah. It's just that we were too much in a rush to get out of there, and that's why we were not zocha to that part of the Torah. So this is a fascinating yisod from the Chidah to explain the significance of these two psukim by Yehi ben Soa, the 85 letters. It's just leftovers from a much larger book. Just like now the halachas perfectly make sense. It's 85 letters left over from a much larger sefer. Okay, we'll stop here.